Okay, we are continuing Ratuchot Sakina, Simen Tzadivav, the beginning of Simen Tzadivav, or basically almost the whole Simen Tzadivav. last time we spoke about the Duchot Sakina and some of the different amounts that you have to clean because of the residue, the end that might be left on a knife, even if the food is not charef. We spoke about different possibilities for different kinds of foods. And now we're going to do some applications of that and then branch into some other variations of Duchot Sakina. Okay, so one application, we already mentioned it last time, but a little more detail now, is if a person wants to buy kosher fish, raw kosher fish, in a non-kosher fish store. So before we get to the Duchot Sakina parts of it, the first and most important part is to figure out that the fish you're buying is actually kosher fish. Now, for most fish, that means is you have to see that the fish has scales on it, and those are scales, they have to be scales that you could pull off without ripping the skin. There are some people who could look at just that skin without scales and tell that it was a kosher fish because it once had scales, but most people would never be able to figure that out. And they need to look to make sure that it has scales, and that those are scales mean that they didn't consider it to be scales that identify kosher fish. One exception is that if it's salmon and the same steelhead trout is a related fish, the flesh color is very unique, and that in itself tells us that we have a kosher fish in front of us. So the first thing, obviously, so that's our first thing, is you have to know you have a kosher fish in front of you, okay? But back to our topic, assuming we have a kosher fish, then the question is, how do we make sure that, we should be concerned that the knife that they're using to fillet our fish or do other things with it, or cut it up, it had been used for non-kosher fish beforehand. Now, we've seen till now, in our last time, that a knife is assumed to have a layer of grease on it, and even if they did some kind of a cleaning of it, and that could transfer onto our kosher food afterwards. And now, we also saw that there are times that you could, there are times or ways to think that nowadays it shouldn't apply when we have a clean knife. That would not be true in a regular, just a plain old fish store, where the knives may not be cleaned very well between one fish and the next. So we should be cautious that the knife has the end on it. So what can we do to solve that problem? So the very best is to go to a kosher fish store. That's easiest, a store that's always kosher. If you don't have a kosher fish store, then next best choice is bring your own knife to the store and tell them to put the fish onto a clean piece of wax paper so there's no end from the table or work or surface going to get on you. You bring your knife and everything is good. You know, not every store is willing to let you bring your own knife or them use your knife. So what you could do is you could watch them clean their knives with soap and water, which we saw is enough to get rid of the band on it, and then watch them doing a good cleaning on a knife, a cleaning that would be good enough for us, and then, again, put out fresh wax paper, and then they could cut the fish for you. Now, in the case of, although, that only helps if they cut the fish completely, or if there was a cut from on the other end of the fish, then you still have to deal with that. Okay, now, in case of the bidyavid, that they already cut the fish, or it's shas atchak, and somehow none of these choices are going to work, then what a person should do is they could take the fish that was cut with a treif knife, and then take off a gdei klipa or shif shvukot, which is what we spoke about last time, that the place where the fish was cut, you assume that there is some residue from treif fish on it, and then you have to do something to get that residue of, again, either cut off a gdei klipa by yourself, or do the rinse it with a shif shuf gadol to get any residue off of the fish. That's a bidyavid only, because you're not supposed to do things that are going to need you to do this kind of washing afterwards. Now, all that I've been saying, all this is when you buy the fish in a fish store. You go to a retail fish store in the supermarket, and you say, can you cut me a piece of that fish? Or they have a few pieces that are cut, and you want to take one of those pieces, one, get that fish. But if you're getting fish that was filleted and cut in the factory, so like a frozen fish, you go to a store that has them frozen, and you know that it's a kosher fish, then these don't apply, and that's because the people who cut those fish cut many slices at a time, they use the same knife again and again, and any residue that would be left would be bottled, because they cut so many pieces. Now, it happens to be that those kind of dinim of, should we assume they use a kosher knife, or they use a knife for many things, and should we assume it's bottled, is actually Platon has spoken about here in our simon. They actually come into our simon, but we're going to wait to Mitzvah and talk about that to simon kuf tes when we talk about bitl of yavish biyavish. That's where it sort of fits in. Okay, but we work with an assumption that if you're buying from a place like from like frozen from a factory where they cut, you know, hundreds of pieces at a time, then it would be okay to buy. Now let's move to buying up fruits and vegetables that are cut in the store. So I'm going to say over in brief, without too many details, something that we spoke about when we learned about alcoholic beverages, some kofi dalet, and we said the following. We assume that you can buy fruits and vegetables in a store, like a fruit store, or a supermarket, or even in a restaurant, assuming that you have vegetables that don't have bug problems. Because first of all, usually they use special knives for cutting the fruits and vegetables. They don't use any other knife. And also, they, as I just mentioned about the fish, they cut a lot of pieces at a time, and therefore, they cut enough pieces that whichever the tray for one is going to be buckled in the kosher ones. Okay, now, those, when we spoke about a kofi dalet, it was based on, those are based on halacha here, halachas pas b'chol, but, and the din here says that you can even do it for davar charav. The example here is lemons. Okay, so according to ask on that din sim kofi dalet, it says, it talks about that you cannot buy olives cut with a non-kosher, because they cut with a non-kosher knife because they're charav. So what's going on over here? How come by us it says you could buy lemons, and over there it says you can't buy the olives? There's more complicated questions having to do with the Ramah Shittas of Hanan, and Mechayel Yishrach, we'll pass on that for right now. So there's a couple of answers given to that question. Why does it say lemons you could buy, and it says olives you can't buy? Some talkers say you should be machmir. Shach says that it depends on how harif the food is. If it's lemons, they're very not so harif, that's one that's okay. Olives are like a little harif, but in between the type of harif, then you shouldn't. And the chotis, which is the case in the Gemara and in Kufi Dalet, is the most harif. So, and he says the machaber is make up for lemons, and you only have to be machmir for the olives and the chotis type of cases. Okay, it's another shita. Chavsta says you only have to be machmir for Pesach. And Yehuda says that no, the whole question is not a question. He says you're allowed to buy the lemons or any olives. It makes no difference. The reason why over there in the case of the olives, the Shulchan Aruch is being machmir is because the guy just cut one olive for you. So if he cut one, then this whole idea of bittul that you know, he cut so many pieces doesn't apply. But by us, we're speaking about a person who cuts many pieces, like would be in a supermarket or wherever. And in those cases, then we don't have to worry about. Because we have bittul considerations that the tray for one or two pieces are bottled and all the rest of them. Okay, all this is for davar charav. The Chacham Sodom says like the Shach, that you should only be made up by the ones that are the least charav, like lemons. But the Aruch HaShulchan, and I think most contemporary Pesachim follow what the Ramah says, like Yad Yehuda says, which is that it's fine as long unless you find like a person who just cut one or two pieces. If you cut lots of pieces at a time, then you're okay. When we get to later in these dinim, not today, a different time, talk about Mechayel Yishrach, we will hopefully get back to talking about lemons and things like that. Okay, so all till now, we talked about Ducha de Sakina for something that was cut. Okay, that's the case of the Gemara, is that you cut tznayin, radish, with a knife, or another Gemara, they cut a chiltis, but both the cases are things that were cut. So the Rishonim assume, it's a Sefer Truma and a Rashba who assume that the same thing is true if you grind something with a pestle. You grind a double harf. That means a case of spice. The case is given as spices. If you grind them also, and the Prim Gadol says the pshat is that he says mali chizik hadicha aduchu d'sakina. The point is that it's the pressure when you cut something. It's not the cutting per se, it's the pressure of the knife pressing down so hard on the thing that's being cut that causes it to be cut. That it's that pressure that causes time to transfer in ways that are special. So he says the same thing happens if I crush something I get the same idea. And this sheet of Rishonim is nobody argues that we know of, and it's brought Shulchan Aruch. Okay, Shulchan Aruch brings it in Halacha Gimel. Okay, now I keep talking about it from the way of saying it in the case of Shulchan Aruch is the case you ground spices, a double harf. So now when we spoke about knives, We said that knives have a problem that they have duchos akin that have special rules for double harv. But we also said, Rashi brings, that knives are assumed to not be clean. They're assumed that they have this shuman korosh aleihem. This grease is stuck onto them. Okay. So in Bali Shochan, he brings a shayla nachronim about whether we should be choshish for that same thing by this pestle when you're grinding something. Should be choshish that also. Is it just for knives that has this thing, or anything that you do grinding with? And one of his rayas, one of the rayas that he brings to be makos, to say, no, you don't have to be choshish ben, is that the mechaber, the Ramah is going to argue on this prat, but the mechaber, when he says over this din, he says, it's talking about that you ground the spices in a machteshes that had been used within 24 hours, for fleshes, you ground the spices. So, why do they have to be used within 24 hours? 24 hours has to do with tam coming out, and whether you can get tam out of the thing. Okay, and that's a reason to talk about ben yoimoy, because of tam getting out of it. But what about the be'enam that's stuck on the outside of the knife, which we saw, that's such a chash, even like if it's not tocharf, what about the be'en that's left on there? That implies that there's no concern of, we don't have to worry about be'en being left on this thing. That's a good raya. One could argue that, right? You could say our case is different because it's grinding things. It's not slicing them, it's grinding them. We're going to see later today Prima Gottner, who says when you grind things, basically all the end gets mixed into this powder. You ground it into a powder, and now it's a taruvis where it's going to be bottled. So the reason, if it would be, the amount that's in there is not it's so little but and that's going to be left on the thing that it's going to be bottled. Okay. Anyhow, that's why he has to talk about that this time, because the end wouldn't have been such a problem. Anyhow, so here's this, the Baal HaShulchan says you could be makel and assume that this grinding device is clean. And you know, it's a machlokes in the achronim, had to understand what the machaber is talking about, but you know, the Maisa, you have to look at each situation separately and say, is this thing usually clean or is it not clean? You know, how much should we be worried that things are clean or not clean? Now, we spoke last time that we worry when we have duchel sakin, it forces things to get stuck on so well, lachari, that should apply in any case. So it's really a matter of, do they clean well, do we not clean well? Lachari, you should have to figure this out. Okay, so now, after you hear me saying all this about grinding could cause duchel sakina, has a problem with duchel sakina, which is din shulchan aruch. So someone might wonder that we should say the same thing about their dental appliances, like fillings and crowns and fillings and crowns, things like that, because we assume usually that there's no bleias into the actual teeth, in real teeth, things of living items. But what about if I have a blea into my crown and now I eat a double harf? Now, usually most people don't have bleias of treif into their mouth. That's pretty unusual. But everyone has the potential, or could think that they have the potential, of bleias of chametz in their mouth. So then, if on Pesach I go eat a double harf, do I have a problem now? Does that cause the tam to come out and make my food chametz thick? Okay, because the reason why I'm saying it is because chewing is the same thing as grinding, the same idea. So if grinding causes a chesakina, then should I be worried to eat a double harf on Pesach because of the blia of chametz that I have in my teeth? So that sounds right, except the problem is the initial assumption is lachari is not correct. The initial assumption is that there are blias in my fillings, or my crowns in the first place, and that's something that most people don't agree with. We spoke about this when we did Hagol's Kalim, and that is, most people assume that there are no blias into a person's dental appliances, because it's not hot enough, and other reasons that are like that. So most people assume that there's no blias in the first place, so if there's no blia, I don't have to worry about what I chew. But there are people who are makbid, and some of those people don't eat any double harf on Pesach. That's a very big chumra, especially if you want to eat marr. but there are also the people who will not eat anything, any hot chametz for 24 hours before Pesach as a way of avoiding these kind of issues. Make sure that any time is in the binyan, so then even if you eat a double harf, there are a lot of tzirufim at that point to be more mako. Okay, it's not, you know, before you run ahead and dunk your braces into your teeth into boiling water, it's usually not possible to do hakol. It's just a side point. Okay, let's move on to another thing. Now that we've said that crushing or grinding a double harf is an example of duchas sakina, That means is that if you do that, tam will transfer from the pestle that you're grinding with and the double harv. So in the case of Shulchan Aruch, you're grinding spices, so the spices get tam from the pestle. If it was fleshing beforehand, those spices, excuse me, can't be eaten in milch zitters. So Chacham Zon says that the same, not only does it cause tam to go into the spices, but it also causes tam to transfer into and out of the plate, or the surface that you're working on, that the harv is on. So that means that if you take a kosher knife, and you take an onion, and you cut the kosher knife on a treif plate, so the tam from the plate is absorbed back into the onion. Okay, you cut this onion, so you cut the davar harv, so the duchel sakin, and you have davar harv. So the Shulchan Aruch talks about the duchel sakin into the onion, or into the davar harv. The Chacham Zalman says, not only is the duchel sakin into the onion, but the duchel sakin into the plate, which is underneath it, and into the plate, and out of the plate also. Okay, that is to say is, so the think, what he means is that, but by the time the knife hits the plate, there's no more onion. Okay, and there's no more cutting going on anymore. So what he means is that as the knife presses down, as the knife is getting closer and closer to the plate, there's pressure between the knife, the onion, and the plate. They're all like, sandwich, there's a sandwich going on here between the knife pressing down the onion, which is down on the plate before it cuts all the way through. As it's about to cut through, that's the duchel sakina, and not only does the tam go into the onion, and it goes into the plate, it goes from the plate and make the from the plate into the onion and make the onion treif. Okay, so we have duchel sakina going, so to speak, upwards, backwards from the thing being cut back into the onion. Now, the Chacham Zon says there are mekilim, but he doesn't like it. He says, I'm saying not like the mekilim. He doesn't say who the mekilim, who he has in mind, but Dr. Chuba brings us something called Sefer Yehoshua, who wants to say, no, it's not true. He says it's true. I was going to say, it's true that there would be, Duchel Sakina would draw time from what, the so to speak, plate back into what's being cut, into what had the Duchel Sakina. He says, that would be true. He says, but that's only true. That's only true when you grind something. So this hard. What he means is that when you grind something, the piece that's grinding, it's a large surface. It's like wide, and it's pressing that on the davar harv and the plate at the same time. When you cut with a knife, there's only the very tiniest edge of the blade, the narrowest, pointiest part of the blade that's pushing down. The size of the knife cut through the onion, fine. There's plenty of duchel sakin over there. But to say that the very edge on the bottom, it's just the tiniest amount, that's what he means. He says that's not the same. He says in theory, there would be duchel sakin. It could even go back from the plate back to the onion, to the food. His cases are, okay, he said there would be, in theory, that would be like that. He said, but he's not, he says it would not be true by a knife. So I'll just mention, Chacham Zon says not to be like the mekilim. That actually brings the Chacham Zon also. And Shlomo Kluger in two different places also assumes that the duchel sakin is backwards from the plate into the food when you cut with a knife. His cases were fleshig and milchig cases, like you cut onions with a fleshig knife on a milchig plate. And he said, at least in theory, there would be problems of duchel sakin from the plate back into the onion, so the onion would be milchig. He'd make it for, so to speak, side reasons. But Be'etzem, he agrees to this idea of Chacham Zalman, that there would be duchel sakin back from the plate into the onion. Now, so we've seen duchel sakin with knives, that's the Gemara's case, duchel sakin by crushing or grinding. So now further is Rav Shlomo Kluger says that if you scrape something, that also causes duchel sakin. Okay, now Rav Shlomo Kluger and the Yehuda both point to a shach, who seems to say, not like that, they have answers for the shach. They say, so if you scrape something, that also causes duchel sakina, and the Dr. Chuba brings that people say if you pierce something with a fork, that also causes duchel sakina. Where do these come from? The same idea is that we've seen before, and what we saw from the Prima Gadim, that it's not the cutting that causes duchel sakina, it's the pressure that comes along with the cutting, and therefore what's the difference whether the pressure is through cutting, or crushing, or scraping, or piercing. It doesn't make a difference. As long as there's something hard two hard things banging against each other, and let's say they're scraping, you're scraping across the surface, they're scraping salt in this case, you're scraping across this block of salt, and you're pushing the knife across it, so there's this pressure one against the other, whether it's cutting down, or grinding, or scraping, it's all the same thing, and if it's a double heart, then it causes tam to transfer. No one thinks that there's going to be, we have to worry about the end being left on forks, right? Forks are presumed to be clean. So our shayla is only going to be true, it's only going to be negeya if it's a double charev. So a double charev could draw out tam that's absorbed. Or if you have to do the scraping, like in case of scraping with a knife. Okay, let's say you're scraping off the salt from the block of salt with a knife, so then there is the end left on it because it's a knife. Okay, but if it's just a fork, then there's no kind of a problem. You do it with a spoon. Okay, now. That's this extra, so this is our third, as far as I know, last step. We had cutting, we had grinding, and now we have scraping that caused zuchot sakina. So when you sharpen a knife, you're essentially, what you're doing is, you're rubbing the knife against a rough surface, or rubbing the rough surface against a knife. Okay, it's essentially a scraping. You're rubbing, the knife is back and forth on this hard surface, or this rough surface, or the other way around, you're rubbing the rough surface on the knife, and l'chaira, that rubbing action is a form of duchad sakina. In fact, just as an aside, we didn't mention it when we talked before in last time about an itzah to clean up a knife. The Gemara gives another itzah, at least for certain cases, of an itzah. Instead of doing the itzah to be sharpen the knife, which is the same idea, which is by sharpening. The sharpening is a rubbing action, and it scrapes off, it will get rid of the end, and maybe bleeds also, that's a shayla. Again, the scraping is another form of duchot, just like ne'itza, just like the duchot that caused the tam in the first place. So, now that we decide, I'm saying to you is that sharpening your knife is a form of duchot sakina. So does that mean that maybe you shouldn't get your knife sharpened at a service that also sharpens non-kosher knives? You're doing duchad sakina to this sharpening surface that's maybe not kosher. So, so the Beis Yosef, Reb Nachum Katz showed us that the Beis Yosef in Siman Kuf Chaf Beis says, at least in his time, he makes it appear like it's obvious. He talks about how that you could sharpen knives by goyim, by people who don't keep kosher. He doesn't talk about why. The shiloh there has to do with the fact that the knife is not in your possession. You want to make sure they didn't use it for somebody else. Not talking about the sharpening per se, but the sharpening was obvious, but we don't have any idea how they, the details of how they did sharpening. It's similar to ours, but we don't really know too much about that. But in modern knife sharpening, people only sharpen knives that are clean. People don't sharpen knives that are dirty, which means is that they're going to be washed with soap and water before, to make sure that they're clean before we get started. So, seemingly, we could be pretty sure that when the knife gets sharpened, there's no residue on the knife, and mamela, there's nothing, no residue on the sharpening equipment either. Well, if the sharpening equipment has no ban on it, then we don't have to worry about. There's no double charev here, so the sharpening equipment is not charev, so we don't have to just worry about. We don't have to worry about time getting onto the surface. We don't have to worry about time getting onto the surface. Then we don't have to worry about putting my knife onto that, so on that surface, it's not trade altogether. Okay, now, there's a little side question, which is, well, what about, wait a second, when we sharpen the knife, there's friction and causes heat. There are those who argue that there's no heat. It's really hard to know. But there are those who said they measured it and there's no heat at all. I'm not sure if that's true. But now, maybe that's true, maybe that's not true. On the possibility that there is, the friction does cause heat, so should we be concerned about time, now, not just for residue, but the time transferring? So here, Nachum Katz again came to the rescue, and he says, no, the knife is only trafed because it has blias. So, in a blue, yes, and clearly erected. So, the tam can't transfer from the knife onto the grinding machinery. That's what he said like that. Now, in commercial knife sharpeners, usually have water spritzing on right at the area where they do the sharpening, because they want to keep it from getting too hot. They purposely spritzing water, so then we can't say anabol yetsim klil klipa reitiv, because there actually is, so to speak, reitiv. There's all this water pouring onto there. But then the opposite is that since they have all the water pouring onto them, then l'chayr it's not hot either. You don't have to worry about how it. Okay. If a person is sharpening their knives at home, they want to use the same sharpener for milk and inflations, it's okay. Just make sure that they wash their knives with soap and water beforehand. There shouldn't be the end left on them. Okay, now, while I took my knife sharpening, I'll throw in two other things. First, and the first is, and nothing to do with our din, the first is that sharpening services, especially commercial ones that deal with like restaurants and caterers, they will replace a knife if it gets ruined. Either it doesn't look good, it got ruined during the sharpening, it got ruined in your store, or they misplaced it, they can't find the knife you had, they'll just give you another one. So a person who sends a knife out, or a store that sends a knife out for sharpening, has to put a mark on it so that they know that the knife that they handed is the one that they get back. And that's actually what the business was talking about, those type of concerns. This way, when the knife comes back, you could see the mark or the hole or whatever you put into it that identifies it as your knife to make sure you actually got your knife back. And the second thing is, if you want to be sure that the sharpening place doesn't wash your knife, meaning like use a dishwasher or a sink, a hot sink, to wash with trade knives, the person or the store should, first of all, choose a place that doesn't have this protocol. Some places have a protocol. Every knife that walks in, we put it through a dishwasher. So that's the first thing. Make sure they don't do that. And the second is, make sure the knife that you send in is actually clean, so they don't have incentive to go ahead and clean it again by themselves. Okay. Now let's move on to one last, one major thing and then one smaller thing. And that is like this. We saw that Docha the Sakina could draw Tom out in ways that would not happen if there wasn't any heat. Okay, now, we also saw a long time ago, when we spoke about not bar not, that not bar not doesn't apply for double harf. Because when Tom transfers into a double harf, but there's no not bar not, and it stays usher, even though it transferred a number of times. Okay, so if I cut a cold double harf with a fleshig knife, that double harf cannot be eaten with milchus. We can't say not bar not. And even though there were two transfers, we can't say not bernak because it's double harv. We are concerned this time, even though it was cold, this time transfers. Okay, that case that I just said is actually the Gemara's case. The Gemara says, if you cut a radish with a fleshig knife, also you can't eat that radish with a dairy food because there's no not bernak and there is transfer of time. Okay, that's pretty forward. That's straightforward. That's something we should be familiar with. Now, what happens now if I take this snine, this radish, this fleshy radish, and I cut it again, and this time with a parva knife? Okay? So now I have this radish that I can't eat with milchus. I cut it with a parva knife, and then I take that parva knife and I cut another double harf. I cut an onion. Okay? So I use the fleshy knife to cut the radish. Then I cut the radish a second time with a parva knife, and I use the second knife to cut this parva knife I used to cut an onion. Okay, that's one exactly an example. But a more common example of how that happens is a person cut an onion with a fleshig knife, and then they pureed it in the food processor. Okay, and then later in the day used it. So what happens is you cut the onion once, then you put it into the food processor. So the onions are fleshigs. Now, the food processor was used to cut this double harf. And then you clean it out, and you put in another onion that you use, another onion, which was not cut with a fleshing knife, just a plain onion that was cut with a parva knife, and you put it back into the food processor. Does that second onion is it fleshings also? Are you allowed to eat that with milchus, or you can't eat with milchus? So in both cases, our end product is an onion. In one case, it was radish, then onion, so it was fleshing knife, cut the first double harf, and then the double harf was cut with something parv, either the food processor or the knife. And then that parv utensil was now used to cut a second double harf. The question is, can you use a second double harf with milchugs or not? So the Magen Avraham says that you should not. You can't eat it with milchugs. even though there's four steps between the meat and the final food. We cut the meat with a knife, that's the first transfer. Then we use that knife to cut the radish or the onion. Then we use another knife or the food processor to cut this radish. And then we use then that food processor or the knife, we just cut another onion. Okay? So even so, all the transfers on the double harf are not part of the not bar not chain. And therefore, even the last onion in the chain is also considered fleshig, and you cannot eat it with milchus. So the Achronim have two issues with this psak of the Magen Avraham. The first is the Eben Ezer. It's like well known, the Eben Ezer's question. He says, over here, Davach Harif only is two of the transfers, the second transfer and the fourth transfer, meaning when they cut the radish and then the first onion and then cut the second onion. But the other two transfers had nothing to do with double charif in them. Okay, there was no double charif in them. They found the meat going into the knife, the first one, and the knife that cut the food processor that cut the radish the second time, that's not double charif. So he says, so let's ignore, even if we ignore the transfers that had double charif in them, but the other there's enough other transfers to say that that to make this thing to say that there should be not pronounced because of that. Okay, so some, a number of Achronim accept what the Ibn Ezra says. I'll mention some names, the Chabastaz and the Aguda, and the Ibn Ezra says that the Shach agrees with him. So they say that Ibn Ezra is correct. The Chayadim says, you know, maybe what the Magen Avraham holds is that the Davar Charav is so strong, we know it's so strong that it prevents not barnat, that it once something was taken out with Davar Charav, it's like powered, and it just goes, wherever it goes, it takes the whole Tam with it. No matter what, whether the Charav is involved in the Tam or not involved in the transfer, it makes a difference. Once the Tam is moving, once it's connected to a Davar Charav, it always travels on completely. It doesn't get ever degraded to be fit for not bar nats. So once you're in the world of double harf, there will never be not bar nats as many times as the transfers happen. The Chayadim says that the Shach, the Nikud Kesev, where it's the son of the Shach, he thinks agrees with this sheet. There's arguing on the Shach that I mentioned before. Okay, so that's one question. The Ibn Ezra's question is that we should still say not for not, and maybe say, no, there's no not for not. Once it's double harv, it's double harv for good, and it'll never have not for not. But the Chavos Das says there's a second question. He says there's a more basic question. He says, how come, so, and we have mentioned this before, in this idea, which is, what's going on over here? The blia that's in the food over here, in the first davar charif, it's not that really fleshigs. The blia that's in the first in the radish is the tan that's in the radish is not inherently fleshigs. It only has a blia of fleshigs. So we should say we have a rule. We want to say when we cut the radish was cut with a fleshig knife, so it became fleshigs. Good, got it. It absorbed tan fleshigs because it got tan from a kli. But now we have the tan that's go from the radish into the second knife or into the food processor. Well, that's blua in a food. And blias from the food don't transfer into kalim without roitiv. There's significant. There'll have to be a lot of roitiv in between them. So once the radish was cut the first time, tam can't get from that radish into another kli. It can't move from there. So you can't eat the radish with the first onion. You can't eat with milchigs because it is fleshigs. But the tam that it has its fleshigs can't get into any other food afterwards. So forget about not bar nats. Okay, let it not be not bar nats. Who cares? But the second knife didn't become fleshigs at all. So if the second knife didn't become fleshigs, then there's no tam going into the second onion or into the onion in the other case. Okay. So that's the Chavos Das's question. So Daki Chuvi says that seemingly the Magen Avraham holds that Duchka the Sakina together with the Davar Charav is so strong that it can even work on a Blia. Even though usually Tam that's Balua and then Oichot can't get out, but if it's Duchka and Davar Charav, then it's so somehow it can. But in Badr Shulchan he shows that most of the Achronim do not accept that. Most of them would not accept the idea to say that once it's that you could make Blias come out of a food. Even if you're a double harv, that makes a difference. Blia is not coming out from an oichel, and a blue yotz and oichel a kli blia right now. That's all within the world that the way I've been describing in the Torah. The Prima Gavim seems to say a pshat in the Magen Avraham that avoids both of these questions. He says we got this wrong. The Magen Avraham is not concerned about absorbed times. The idea absorbed times have to deal with not bar not, have to deal with in a blue yotz. That's what blue. He says, no, you're missing the thing here. What the Magen Avraham is talking about is that when you cut an onion, then some of the be'en transfers from the knife onto the radish or the first onion over here. So he says, and that's why the Magen Avraham is specific to a case where the second duchad sakina happened by grinding And the difference being is, when you grind the food, then all of the be'en, that all of the be'en that was on the first food, on the first food that you ground, is completely transfers onto the second knife, and then from the second knife on further. It's the point is all the be'en, if you just cut, then there's one area where you cut it at. But if you then grind that food, you're going to transfer all of the be'en onto there. And, excuse me, it's covered with grease, with lots of grease on it. And so then when you cut a second double carve there, then it's just basically a dirty knife, a knife that's dirty with the end of that's fleshings that's going to transfer onto the double carve. Okay, so we're not talking about bleas, we're talking about the end transferring, and it's special to a case where we did grinding, and by doing grinding, then we have to be worried that all of the time transfers, not just a little bit, or just about all of it transfers over there. And that's where there's a problem. Okay, now, it happens to be that the Mishabura brings the Magen Avraham without any of these explanations. He doesn't say any explanation, doesn't bring any chalakim, just brings it, Magen Avraham says like this, as if like that's as is straight. Not even like this Prim Gogman says, it's a very specific case. But I think that Lamaisa, most places can assume like the Magen Avraham, that's my impression. Do not assume like the Magen Avraham, especially in cases of the Evid. And even the Chayadim says, it could be that even the Magen Avraham is makeup of the Evid, the Magen Avraham just says is, you shouldn't do this L'chatir, so like you didn't ask them what they do, maybe it's Mutter B'di Evid, but it's my impression that most Achronim, I mentioned a bunch of names already, most of the Achronim do not agree with what this Magen Avraham says. I mentioned some of the names. Okay, so now we have one last thing to say, and that is, Rikveka says that if you cut an onion or a davar charav with a fleshed knife, and then you eat that knife, you can't eat that onion with milchiks, no problem. But he says you do not have to wait 6 hours before you eat milchiks. He says the time is absorbed into the onion, that's true. He says, but it's not different than if you cooked in a fleshed pot. If you cook something in a fleshed pot, you don't have to wait 6 hours after that. So here too, it's not worse than being cooked in a fleshed pot. So if you eat that onion or that radish or whatever it is, you can eat milchiks right after. You just can't eat milchiks with it, but you can eat milchiks right afterwards. What about the opposite case? Somebody ate fleshigs, and then he wants to eat an onion or a radish that was cut with a milchuk knife. Would that be okay? So Prima Galdim in Arachayim says you cannot. You have to wait 6 hours before you eat that onion. You have to place where you eat that onion. But the Marsham, again, also in Arachayim, it's in Hilchos Shavuos, but the Halachas of Shavuos with the milchuk. The Marsham says, he brings a bunch of reasons to say why he thinks why this Prima Galdim is not arguing under the Kveger. And he says, Be'etzem, he thinks you can eat it. It's fine to eat it right at the fleshigs. Maybe even right afterwards, for sure. If you wait an hour, you could, but maybe even right away. And Rabbi Friedman, when he spoke about it once to us, said the minute is to be makel, and you don't have to wait it. I later saw also, they quote Rabbi Yashiv as saying the same thing also, there's a Taka Jew about it, that you do not have to wait. You can eat this milk of onion right after you ate fleshigs.